Welcome to Property Litigation Bites by Hagen Wolf, delivering the latest analysis of property litigation trends to UK landowners, developers, landlords, and tenants.
24/7 global connectivity via social media in particular seems like a given in 2025 Britain. So why is the installation and management of the equipment that makes this possible such a contentious issue? Today, we introduce the concept of telecoms law as it relates to property disputes and discuss how the installation of telecoms equipment impacts affected landowners, otherwise known as site providers. This episode will serve as the start to a series of episodes focusing on the topic of telecoms. I'm Amy Light, an associate and property litigation solicitor at Hagen Wolf, specialising in telecoms. I'm joined by Hagen Wolf partner and fellow property litigation solicitor, Richard Robinson, who's also a telecom specialist.
Thanks, Amy. Yes, telecoms equipment can be a highly caustic issue, particularly for landowners. I'm looking forward to introducing the law and some of the commercial issues around the siting of telecoms equipment and why it can be pretty complex.
Great. So why don't we start by explaining why we've called this episode an introduction to telecoms? What do we mean by that?
We're talking about the siting of electronic communications equipment on land, which facilitates communication networks. So most of us have mobile phones. Most of us enjoy downloading lots of things from our phones these days, whether it's football, videos, music, whatever. But in order for us as consumers to be able to access this data and information and to be able to make our calls and more traditional things like that, there needs to be a communications network which we can receive signals from. And so there is a lot of equipment which needs to be set up around the country in order for us to be able to pick up that signal, download this data and get to our music and so on and so forth. That means that equipment needs to be sited on land. It may be that we have mast sites, so we have poles or lattice masts sticking out of the ground, and they may well need to be in line of sight to other masts so that they can transmit to one another. And all of this means that there is a lot of physical equipment which needs to be sited on people's land.
That's right. And that equipment is sited on that land pursuant to agreements between site providers, the owners of that land, and commercial telecommunications operators. And they are entities which are licensed by Ofcom to operate and run a telecommunications network. So our listeners will no doubt have heard of some of these more obvious examples, such as EE and Vodafone. But there are also intermediaries, which are known as wholesale infrastructure providers. And their role is to provide infrastructure, such as masts, from which the service providers can hang their equipment off. So what is it that we're looking at as property litigators in the telecommunications world?
This equipment, as we're talking about, and there is a lot of it, needs to be sited on land. And because not all of that equipment can be sited on publicly owned land, it means that it has to be sited on landowners, private landowners' land. And therefore, there has to be a relationship between private landowners and the mobile network operators and the wholesale infrastructure providers as to, well, how are they going to occupy that land? What is the relationship between the operators and the site providers, the landowners? What do those agreements look like? How can they first come on as operators onto private land? And what happens then in terms of getting an agreement in relation to that electronic communications equipment being on the land? What happens when they want to renew those agreements? What happens if a landowner wants to remove the operators from those sites? What happens if an operator wants to introduce different operators to site, or perhaps add a load more equipment if perhaps they're wanting to upgrade how they're transmitting from that site? So there's a whole host of issues in relation to the regulation of the occupation of land by operators and wholesale infrastructure providers. And that is something which is obviously causing and has caused and will continue to cause potentially a lot of disputes. And this is what we see when it comes across our desk. And I think it's fair to say that the relationship can be quite fraught and has been for a long period of time. Why do you think that is, Amy?
I mean, that's certainly the case and certainly what we see as litigators. And what this really stems from is what I'd term the polarisation of interest between the two parties that are involved in this transaction. So the operators, their key business driver is to be able to put out transmissions and maintain and improve upon and build a strong network coverage for the benefit of its customers, its consumers, such as ourselves. And to be able to do that effectively, they need to be able to get on to the patches of land that they need to build on that infrastructure. So placement of those mast sites and the infrastructure is critical. So it's a slightly different transaction to what you might term a traditional commercial property lease transaction. For example, the McDonald's franchise, the latest opening, there'll be some kind of business strategy behind where they want that opening to be, but it does not necessarily need to be that precise unit on that precise road. You know, the other options available. Whereas with operators, it is that critical, as we've spoken about, the line of sight to enable the transmission and receipt of signals is what they're all about. On the other side of the fence, you have the site providers who have to deal with the consequences of having that equipment on their land. And hosting electronic communications apparatus can be a real impediment. They will have to deal with issues such as allowing access to a multitude of contractors. They may have security and safety concerns. And the very fact that equipment is sited on their land may inhibit them from doing certain things that they may want to do themselves with their property. It may obstruct redevelopment potential. And site providers want to be compensated for those troubles. And as we'll come on to, the government has legislated in such a way that that's not necessarily the case. And this can really influence how site providers deal with the operators, can't it?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, as you've mentioned, Amy, there's obviously a lot of frustrations and concerns which site providers have in relation to having operators on their land. But obviously, on the other side of the fence, the operators themselves experience a lot of difficulties in relation to their relationships with landowners and site providers. Sometimes it can be difficult to get access, even when they've got a lawful right to access their site. You know, their equipment, you know, does need to be maintained. Sometimes it breaks, and therefore they do need access to the site. And there can be difficulties with site providers in gaining such access. And sometimes, because of the frustrations that you mentioned, Amy, what we do hear about is that site providers take matters into their own hands if they're getting frustrated with operators. You know, they may turn off electricity supplies and so on and so forth. And, you know, disputes are going to definitely arise out of those sort of situations. As consumers, we are now very heavily reliant on our mobile phones in this day and age, and therefore we do need this equipment for the transmissions and signals for us to be able to access networks. There's going to have to be a continuing relationship between operators and site providers. And so we do really need there to be more engagement as much as possible, because we obviously want a healthy relationship between all of the stakeholders, whether that be government, whether it be that the consumers of mobile phone networks, whether that be the landowners, or whether that be the operators, either the actual mobile network operators or the wholesale infrastructure providers that we've talked about.
Now, obviously, telecommunications, it's not an entirely new phenomenon, is it? But there has been some relatively new legislation, which I've alluded to already, which some would say has made matters worse. Can you tell us about that?
I've been practicing in this area of law since the days of the old code. And what we have seen is, in truth, not a huge amount of legislation over a long period of time since 1984 in a sector such as telecommunications, where obviously technology advances rapidly. And so what we have seen has been a call for the law to be updated to help mobile network operators roll out new sites, upgrade, share their sites so that they can keep up with the advancements of technology. And broadly speaking, the government is very supportive of that, because they don't want Great Britain, of course, to fall behind in terms of technology compared to other countries. And so what happened was that there was a consultation on this old code, which effectively dated from 1984, saying, well, how can we roll out networks and upgrades and sharing and make sure that we keep ahead of the curve? And how do we deal with not spots, maybe areas in rural locations which didn't have access to telecommunications or good access to telecommunications in a way which we would want for modern Britain? And so there was consultation on that. And then eventually the new code came in, which was at the end of 2017. And the idea was that they would help roll out infrastructure, telecommunications network sites, and facilitate greater connectivity. But in fact, what truly happened was that it totally stalled the market. And the reason for that is, well, the reasons, sorry, are manifold. But probably two of the main reasons was, firstly, that under the old code, it was commercial market rents which were being paid for these sites. Whereas under the new code, effectively rent, which is now consideration, have been depressed significantly, because rather than looking at the value to the operator for those sites, which is where you've got your market rent and a sensible amount of, or at least a decent amount of money, and was being paid for these sites, now we're only looking at the value of the land without thinking about its value to the operator. So taking away the telecommunications equipment. So some of these sites can be quite small. If they're on rural land, it may be that actually the consideration, the rent for these sites is actually pretty small. Now, we've had a few cases recently where the consideration is increasing. It's still a relatively small amount compared to what we used to have under the old code. So that's one of the reasons. It's been one of the major reasons. It's about the money. We can put up, certain landowners and site providers would say, with so much hassle if we're getting properly recompensed for it. The other major reason, of course, is that once we did get this new legislation in 2017, it was new. And therefore, it had to be clarified and understood. And that has taken a process of going through the courts. And there are a lot of new sites being rolled out. There was a lot of resistance to new sites, especially with this issue as to lower rents. And therefore, there's been a lot of cases fought through the tribunals and the courts to understand what the new code means and what the operators are truly entitled to and what the site providers are truly entitled to. So we had a huge outpouring of cases to begin with from the tribunal, where the market really did almost completely stall. And then we have had a period of time subsequent to that where perhaps things have settled down a little bit. But again, we're constantly, are we not, Amy, receiving lots of updates from the tribunals as to case law on almost a monthly basis.
That's right, Richard. And that's obviously what we see as property litigators in this area. The law is constantly evolving and updating, and it's a very hot area of property litigation to be involved in at the minute. I myself began practicing in this area shortly after the new code's in inception. And obviously, as you've mentioned, the genesis behind this new code is all about enabling and facilitating the rollout of the additional infrastructure that the country is demanding. And to achieve that, what the new code has done, it's introduced this concept of code rights, basically the rights that you might want to use if you were going to install and run telecommunications equipment on land. So the right to install, the right to maintain. There are some slightly more unusual code rights, such as the right to lop trees. The new code says that these code rights can be granted by a site provider to an operator on a consensual basis. However, if the site provider does not agree, as you say, the operators can now ask the tribunal to impose code rights against a party's wishes. And that's provided the operator can satisfy certain tests. And the new code is operator friendly due to the underlying policy reasons behind it. So those tests are not onerous. They're fondly known as the paragraph 21 tests. They reflect the notion that hosting telecommunications equipment on your land is now seen as a sort of public duty, is a reference that what has been made in case law. It's to ensure that the country has decent network coverage. And what the test says is that provided any prejudice to the site provider can be compensated in money, and provided that that prejudice does not outweigh the public benefits in having access to high quality equipment, and provided it's not going to prevent a site provider from carrying out a genuine redevelopment plan, the operators can set up shop on your land. So it can be hard to resist operators who wish to come onto your land and set up a new site. The new code, it's also made it more difficult to remove them at the end of the term of their agreement, except on very limited grounds, of which we will come on to in subsequent episodes in more detail. But it also provides that landowners need to give significantly longer notice periods. And there's also an additional procedural step, which now may need to be taken to actually remove that equipment even after the agreement has been successfully terminated. Another thing that we're seeing, operators can now insist on certain terms in those agreements, such as the right to share or upgrade their equipment. And as you've mentioned, perhaps most controversially, there is this new valuation methodology, which is specifically for telecoms rents, or known now as consideration. And what this does in practice is significantly reduces the rents that site providers can achieve. We mentioned at the start, Richard, that these mass sites or telecommunications equipment sites, they're sited all over the country. Are there differences between the types of site?
There can be street work sites, so they're probably on local authority land, where maybe you've just got a monopole and a big cabinet next to it, which you may see when you're walking down your local street. It could be that they're just microcell sites where they're very small bits of equipment, which may be placed on the front of a shop, for example. It could be that we have rural sites where there is an access road up to a pretty remote mast, which is pretty self-contained. Or it could be that there's a heavy nest of equipment, perhaps on the top of residential or commercial property in the city centre. So you can find these sites pretty much anywhere, and the operators can be quite inventive and creative as to how they can place their telecommunications equipment to try and facilitate a transmission of their signal and facilitate the rollout of their networks. And there can be both similar and different problems with all these different types of sites. So, for example, if you're in perhaps a rural setting, you know, it may be the case that operators aren't always giving you the necessary access requests before they come onto your land. They may be not closing gates as they should be on occasion, which if you've got livestock is an issue, both for the livestock just going on their merry way themselves, or for, you know, in worst cases, perhaps sheep rustlers or whatever trying to steal the livestock. So there's security concerns there. It could be that they're coming onto land with inappropriate vehicles. Maybe it's not 4x4 when they're going through muddy access tracks, and then the farmers or other people are having to pull them out with more appropriate vehicles. So it's causing those sort of issues. In a more residential setting, of course, people are actually living and where the mass sites are. You know, who are these contractors who are coming in, gaining access to, say, blocks of apartments? There are issues around that. It can be that in residential complexes, there are things like schools and nurseries, so there's all safeguarding issues. So you can see that there's the potential for conflicts in all of those kinds of situations. But perhaps you could discuss a little bit more, Amy, about other types of conflicts due to the interests, competing interests really, which the site providers, the landowners have compared to the operators.
Yeah, so there's a few categories really of interactions that we commonly see between site providers and operators as property litigators. So to take it relatively chronologically, the first interaction that a site provider may have with an operator is when they're approached by an operator who wishes to carry out what is known in the trade as an MSV, a multi-skilled visit. And this is basically when the operators want to come onto a patch of land, a rooftop or so on, and scout out whether it's going to be suitable for the installation of equipment to improve or develop their network. From there, If they decide that they do want to go ahead, you may then find that they approach you seeking permanent code rights in relation to the site. And this is when they wish to have those rights documented in a code agreement for a term of years, for example. You also see interactions when operators want to renew existing agreements. And this can be a complicating factor as litigators, because the new code is not retrospective. And what this means, I was careful to say at the start that the new code applies to certain telecommunications agreements. And that's because there are different types of what are known as pre-existing agreements, i.e. agreements which were already in force before the new code came into being. And this means that there are different renewal procedures which may need to be followed, and not all of those issues have necessarily been ironed out, despite it being seven or so years hence. And then we also see, of course, when site providers want to terminate code rights, the new code has only four termination grounds. So a site provider who wishes to terminate a code agreement will need to serve a notice which cites one of those grounds. And we've seen that those grounds are very narrowly construed by the tribunal because of this underlying policy of the code, that it's all about ensuring that the operators can maintain their network coverage. And we had a case only in the last couple of weeks which considered three of those termination grounds. There was a site provider who wished to terminate his code agreement, relied on all three grounds, and was defeated on all three. So it's reflective of how difficult it can be to remove operators, should you wish to do so. So, Richard, what should people be doing in these situations?
I think sort of drawing some of the threads from what we've been discussing about Amy, you quite rightly said, first thing to understand about telecoms is that this is a different world. You know, it isn't the sort of commercial negotiations which we may be used to dealing with in other of our property asset related matters. The operators have a very particular reason to be. They need to operate. And therefore, just thinking that you're going to be able to do a negotiation, a horse trade with the operators is probably not the correct approach. In a nutshell, it's take early specialist advice. It's assume nothing, because things change so quickly in this world. What we will be doing, as you said at the beginning of this podcast, is we'll be having a look at those situations in more detail and to explain a little bit more about the complexities in relation to the various stages, as you rightly said, in that kind of chronological order. So when operators may first approach you, if you don't have a mast site on your land at all, when they approach you then asking for an agreement to impose mast sites on your land, what happens then at the renewal stage, and then what happens if you actually want to terminate that agreement, whether because there's been breaches of the agreement or whether perhaps you want to carry out a redevelopment, you want to change the use of your land. But we have several podcasts planned to discuss those topics in more detail.
That's great, and we look forward to those. Thank you so much for providing your expertise on this today, Richard.
And you're Sue. Thanks, Amy.
If you have any concerns about telecommunications equipment on your land or that of your clients, please do contact hello@hargandwolf.co.uk or find me and Richard on LinkedIn.
Thank you for listening to Property Litigation Bites. Harg & Wolf is an award-winning UK law firm specialising exclusively in property litigation and disputes. If you would like to discuss any of the issues covered in this episode, please contact us at hello@hargandwolf.co.uk. You can also find us on LinkedIn. Visit www.hargandwolf.co.uk for further insight and analysis.